recording so we don't miss anything, and I'll also lock the room so somebody else doesn't have to be embarrassed by coming in. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself, David.
Not before, but it was a while back. I'm an artist and an art teacher, and I don't really know where to go from there.
I remember. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure you talk with so many people, it's probably hard to keep it straight.
I do sometimes. And your setting is a little bit different. So we had a brief conversation last time, if I recall.
It was about an hour.
Was it an hour?
It ended up being mostly about my parents and my Christian upbringing.
Oh, that's right. We didn't share it, did we?
No, we did.
We did?
Yeah.
Boy, I must be getting old. I'm sorry.
I probably had a beard at the time, so you called me.
Oh.
So that's probably what it is.
Okay. Yeah. So I can link to it, and that way people can, you know, we can watch the previous video and get up to speed.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
That kind of lays out, like, a lot of, I guess, my background and where I'm at. But first, I wanted to thank you because I was asking you for some resources, and you sent me in Ryan Reeves' direction, which is really helpful.
Oh, yeah, for church history.
Yeah, church history. It was really, really helpful, and kind of putting things just in order. So I used that, and then I started reading St. Augustine's Confessions because you mentioned them a lot, and that's kind of like what got me on this role, and then like all these different things have been happening lately that have been kind of bringing this idea about authority, because I didn't set out to be a teacher. I fell into it. I was trying to find something to have time to make artwork with. And I was like, oh, I got breaks. And that's not how it works. It took me like 5 years before I had enough energy to even like do anything for breaks, as far as like my artwork's concerned. Mm-hmm. But when I started teaching, authority kind of like became like a big, just like concept that I've been meditating on. And it started because like I didn't want to be a tyrant in the classroom, but then also I have to keep control of the classroom. And so then suddenly this just like explodes into like, well, if anybody who's in any form of position of power, how do you deal with that, especially in a righteous way, in a moral way? And so it's just kind of been something that's been taken in the back of my head. And I kind of like thought about it for really heavily for about 3 years. And then it just keeps kind of coming back up. I think the best way to kind of start with like really kind of peaked it up again was I listened to Jonathan Peugeot a lot. And so he was talking about a hierarchy. And he was talking about blessings specifically, and how you can get I understand getting a blessing from like, you know, a pastor or your priest, and like they're kind of at the top of the hierarchy, so to speak. But then he was saying that somebody who's the least can give you a blessing too. And so that kind of like shook me, because it was, I think of the hierarchy in like a pyramid. So whoever is like a king, or like if you just take like one basic aspect, like power and wealth or something. So you got the person at the top, and then they have all this advantage and all this power and all this kind of stuff. But then it's not a pyramid, it's just a top, and it's not just a bottom. It's also like the pyramid flips down. So it comes to a point at the top, but then it also comes to a point at the bottom. So the highest and the lowest both have this ability to have the authority to give a blessing. And that was really, that's like really confused me. But then he talks a lot about Jesus being extending through the hierarchy. And so not only is he the highest, but he's also the lowest. And so he can bridge, he has authority on both ends. It's all kind of rambling, but I got notes.
No, it's not rambling. I'm tracking with you.
Okay.
And I think you're right. So keep going.
Okay. So, I've been kind of thinking about this and mulling over it, but then I read Confessions, and this idea about the highest and lowest with their own kind of authority, just kind of was like, okay, that's interesting, and then to the side. But then I was reading Confessions, and I was really struck by how contemporary it felt. It didn't feel like it was written as long ago as it was. And it really surprised me, because the level of analysis that he is looking at every little thing he's ever done over his whole life, and looking at his motivations. And that really reminded me of the last talk, because I kind of talked with you about, you can just spiral out of control of like, why am I doing anything? What are my real motivations for it? And you could really just push it. And he's looking at that level of analysis. But then when he gets to like the climax of it, where he's in the garden, it just was so powerful, because he's talking about the sin that he has, and he's chained to it, and he doesn't want to leave it. And so the sin or the passion, like, it just clicked. I was like, oh, it has authority over him, and he's even submitted to it, because he's like in it. And I was like, man, like, he had a great way of just saying, like, he didn't even want the thought of not having it was keeping him from whatever steps he could make forward. And so I was like, there it is again. There's this whole authority thing. I grew up evangelical, and they talked about idols from the pulpit, and, oh, you can, anything can, they extrapolated it to where anything can be an idol, which is true. But then this is like, it was such a solid, like, obvious, my level of analysis for it was not low enough. And so when Augustine describes it, I'm like, I know exactly what he's talking about. I felt that. I've had to deal with stuff like that. And then for Lent, I decided that I gave up something, but then I also decided, well, let me copy the Gospel of John. I'm just going to do that for Lent. So that's been kind of one of my Lenten practices I've been doing every day. I copy a little bit of it. And it was like the same day or like the day after I read this thing in Confessions, just like struck me. I get to John 5, and maybe about 3 months ago, finished reading through the New Testament, and I just missed all this stuff. It's John 5, and I just couldn't get over what Jesus is saying about, in this section of it, he's talking about his relationship to the Father and how the Son imitates the Father. And he's laying out this sense of, I do what I do because of my Father, and I'm the Son, and the Son imitates the Father. And I was just dumbstruck. And I don't know exactly, it's something I have to keep mulling over, but there's the authority thing again, because he even says he doesn't judge anyone, but he's been given the authority to judge, even though he doesn't judge. And then as I like kind of just been going through Lent, it's like, it keeps coming up in John over and over and over. He doesn't. And then he says that he submits to the Father. And that his authority is gotten from the Father. And that just like blew my mind, because Jesus is saying that it's almost like his ability to do these things is legitimized by the fact that he is submitting to a higher thing than himself. Mm-hmm. And and then I listened to you and Nick's conversation y'all had. I think it was the Colts 3
yep,
or 4.
Yep, yep.
Well, it ended up being the ineffable.
Yes, and, yes.
And so then he was, he said in there, you have to submit to the energy or it'll crush you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was saying, to whom I give my freedom is the only choice we have. And I just, all this stuff is just, boom, 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 boom. And then, you know, and it really, and then you talk to Cord, and I was just, and he described the hierarchy thing in a cone. And after I listened to that, I was like, okay, well, if at the bottom of the cone, so we go from unity to being dispersed, but if at the bottom of the cone, you took discrete points, each of those discrete points goes down to its own point. And mm-hmm. and that's how you talk about when you try to bring heaven down, you're bringing hell up. And then Jonathan Pageot just had his video with the, I don't know if you saw it, the tyranny of the individual.
Yeah, I haven't listened carefully to that one. I had one run through it. But
okay. Well, then you know, he talks about how our attention's being pulled in every which way.
Right.
And so it's almost like, even though each of those discrete points go down, they're all fighting, or like you're more susceptible to being pulled from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
It just, all of this stuff just kind of like really shocked me, because I hadn't thought about the idea of authority or the idea of this, and it just I don't know, it's like all suddenly just like it all came to a head, and it seems to be tied in so much with all these different things, because like Jordan Peterson talks about with you have too many things to understand, so you have to divide the world up, then we have that authority given to us. And it's just such a crazy, I don't know, it's just huge, huge thing. So I don't know. That's what I want to talk to you about. And
wow. You've just really taken a whole bunch of stuff and just kind of,
yeah,
and that was really cool. I think you did it really well. You're really synthesizing. I mean, Jonathan Pageot is such an interesting thinker, and he's got such a gift for reading what's going on and locating it and distilling it. I guess that's what artists do. I mean, that's the gift of someone who can do art, to take the ineffable and make it tangible.
Yeah.
And but now you're so right on Augustine. I mean, it's the true definition of art or a classic, that you can read Augustine today and think, wow, it doesn't sound out of date. You can read someone from 10 years ago and think, wow, that moment is totally gone. But you read Augustine and it's like, wow, this guy wrote, you know, 1500 years ago, and I'm still learning. And I think I really love that image, working off Cord's idea of the cone, and that at each discrete point that goes down. And so you can almost imagine kind of an infinite, you can't really draw it in three dimensions in your mind, but almost this, you know, connecting up down to the inverted hierarchy that goes down.
Right. Right. That's a good way to think about it.
That's really a helpful idea, really a helpful image. And I had never kind of put that together before. So you got all this stuff. You're and I also loved how, you know, you noted, you know, we currently have this incredible problem with authority and power, that all authority is dismissed because of their critique of power. But you are a classroom teacher, and as you know, this whole business of classroom management really is based on authority, because especially now with classrooms today, you have very little you have like no power. And, you know, back in the day, maybe there was a paddle, or there was a fear of being suspended or expelled from school. Well, all those things have been taken away. And so all you have is authority. So then you have the question, well, what is authority? where does it come from? Where can I get it? Because we need it in the classroom. Otherwise, it's just going to be chaos.
Right.
And so you can have tyrannical order. And, you know, most of us who have listened to this have been in classrooms where we have plenty of examples. You have the tyrannical order. You have true authority where everyone comes to the class and is silent because they know that the teacher has authority and teaches with authority. Mm-hmm. And then you have classes where that just is never gelled and it's total disaster and everything in between. So I love how this is all coming into your life, and especially for you as an art teacher, because art has, I mean, I just finished a conversation with a guy named Bern Power, who I'm sure will play this and you're going to love this because he's huge into art history, music history and all this. And he's, the challenge with him is going to be nailing him down because he's typical artist. He's all over the place. My older sister is an artist, and when Peterson talks about someone who can't monetize, that's my older sister. She's an off the hook artist, but she's going to die in poverty because she can't, she's too artist. But, but you know, so an art teacher, art on one hand is celebrated, but in a, the kind of celebration that we're not going to put any money into it.
Right. It's always great. Everybody tells you, oh, it's so great. It's so great. I wish they would fund it.
That's right. Wow. Look at those ribs.
I'm lucky where I'm at, where our city really, really puts forth an effort for it. But yeah, typically you hear it's one of those things like, oh, it's great. And then why isn't that $5? And you're like, oh.
So, okay, so I didn't want to distract you and disrupt this because you were really on a roll. I mean, this was just total brain dump in terms of there's this and there's this and there's this. And I was tracking all with it. And it was really, really good in terms of, you know, you've taken all of these bits of things and you're synthesizing them and putting them together. And so, what's next for us in this conversation? Where do you want to go?
I don't know. I was just like, the topic is like a good topic. And I think it's so, I really think Jordan Peterson must be reading John, because, it's funny because he always
quotes John 1. If he gets past John 1, I don't know, because he hasn't said much more about the book.
No, he hasn't, but he's always saying that Jesus just says like the craziest stuff that he just can't understand. And like I read, like when I got to John 5, I was like, man, like it was the first time I was so struck by like the strangeness of what he says, and how it couldn't, like, you can't just think that up and then be like, oh, you know, well, all, and then the line of the lines leading back to the Father, which he constantly is saying, which I miss that somehow. And I think some of that's just the level of analysis of what I'm reading now versus when I have in the past. But he, like Jordan Peterson's always talking about the highest good. And so, Jesus is constantly saying that it's not his authority, but it's his Father's authority. That's why he does it. He does it because my Father speaks to me and through me. And the idea that there's something above us that we submit to seems like it's a important facet of legitimacy of authority.
Yes.
Because even with our elections, you know, it's a mess, but you know, we still have this idea that the officials are still have to submit to the highest does submit to the lowest because the lowest are the ones who elect the highest.
Yes. Yes.
And so I don't know. It's just the way all these things were lining up one after the other, and then the conversations that you were having with these different people, and how I just keep like the theme of like submitting to authority kept coming up just right in the middle of my life, and I I don't feel as though I have it, but I know in particular in my family, the men, we all have like pride issues. I mean, it's a big deal. So I'm always having to like overanalyze my, my reasons for doing things and like making sure that that's not trying to sneak in, and I'm trying to do it to make myself better or whatever. I don't know that, it keeps coming up, and then, there's something there that I don't know if I'm missing or not, because I think it's just a, something about the way the hierarchy works, and, submitting to, I don't know, maybe it's just as simple as submitting to that, which is good, and then I'm overthinking it or something, but.
Well, we have a real cultural problem with all of the things that you're working on, because the American ethos says you're knocking on all the right doors, okay? There's a reason you're experiencing all of this dissonance. And so Peterson and the Gospel of John, if he ever gets there, because he likes, so there's certain things he does. So we did, he touched on Genesis. That was the biblical series. Yeah. He wants to talk about Exodus. He likes to dip into the Sermon on the Mount.
Right.
He takes a few sayings of Jesus, which are mostly from the Synoptics. He takes the Logos from John 1. Mm-hmm. But, so I've been doing, in my adult Sunday school class, which I do on my other channel, I did 2 John, I did 3 John, I'm still in 1 John, and then I'm going to do the Gospel of John. Mm-hmm. Now, so you've got Revelation, 3 Johns, and the Gospel of John. That's the Johannine corpus in the New Testament.
Okay.
And it's, so you've got John, you've got Paul, which is a huge part of the New Testament. And so Luke is kind of Paul because Luke was in Paul's camp. So Luke and Acts, they're all Pauline. You've got some Peter, you know, you've got a few stragglers out there like Hebrews, mm-hmm. And James. But John is like the second major piece of the New Testament. And when you get into the Gospel of John, the picture of Jesus in the Gospel of John is so brilliant and stark, especially in some ways compared to the Synoptics. People, New Testament scholars, critical New Testament scholars will say things like, well, Jesus really isn't divine in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. I would assert that he is.
Because I've heard that argument recently, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they're actually taking fully appreciating the cultural context of what's happening in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But in John, nobody can deny it, because in John, Jesus is the man from heaven who comes down. And so when Peterson gets to John, I don't know what Peterson is going to do, because it is John, it's just blazing. And so as you're dealing with these questions of authority and submission, I mean, for Peterson, you know, I'm working on a video right now that actually for the first time at an hour and 40 minutes yesterday that I erased, boom, going to redo that. It's a long video. I'm going to entirely redo it. Hopefully I'll do it after I finish talking to you. But I start with the firing line conversation between Peterson and some woman who's interviewing him. And, you know, she asks him the question he hates, you know, what a belief in God, yes or no? And I don't want to do a sound bite, and I don't want to join a club. These are the sound bite, I believe in God, you know, joining a church. And when you join a church, you know, even a Protestant church like the Christian Reformed Church, very much the Roman Catholic or an Orthodox church, very much an Orthodox church, you submit.
Yeah, yeah.
You submit to the body. Mm-hmm. And Americans hate that.
Yeah.
We might accept an authority, but I choose. That's the bottom cone here.
Yeah, I choose. Okay, yeah.
I choose who I submit to. And in a sense, what you're saying is you're inverting that hierarchy again, and you're saying, I'm at the top of the hierarchy.
Yeah.
And
that's interesting, because it's a double inversion that Matt, Jonathan's always talking about.
That's right. I'm at the top of the hierarchy. And so I get to choose what's God, and I get to choose what's good. And well, that puts me really much at the top of the hierarchy. And a big part of the ancients all knew this. Christianity knows this. Most religious traditions know this. Individual human beings, we have a degree of authority, because you can't have responsibility without authority. Those two things come together. Mm-hmm. And so Peterson talks about responsibility, and that's critical for his meaning thing, but he hasn't fully, I don't know if he's even started, really to work on the question of authority, because within the secular age, there are real issues with authority, because everything is locked within that box. And in a theistic conception, even in almost any ancient pagan conception, well, take apart the word authority. Why does Tolkien have authority over Middle Earth?
Yeah, because he wrote it.
He wrote it. He's the author. And so in a classroom, in a sense, what the teacher wants from the classroom is the hour that you'll be together, and then the series of hours that become the semester. You want that to be a story, and the teacher is the author, but like the way God is the author of history, all of your students are actually also sub-authors, sub-creators, as Tolkien would say, and they are writing the story with you.
Yeah.
And anyone who sets down to write, especially fiction, you know, Lewis talks about the fact he was trying to write a children's book, and it wasn't until... It wasn't until he discovered Aslan, and once Aslan came into the story wrote itself. Well, that's weird.
But well, I understand that from perspective, because you kind of, and you'll hear it a lot. Like, it's not just me, but like musicians, artists, like whenever people ask, like, well, where does it come from? You just kind of like, well, it's... Everybody kind of points up, you know. It's just
Everybody points up.
Yeah, you just like it's just you kind of crack the lid open on the box, and then, you know, let it kind of take you. I mean, like, it's a little bit more precise than that, but I mean, once you start really, it's like the flow state that John Gravecki talks about.
Yes,
I mean, like when he did a video recently about he was trying to describe a transcendent experience, or like what it was like to be in one. And I was like, man, that's awfully close. But that's a whole other thing. But yeah, it's, I think the flow state, like the way he's described it, is probably about as close as you can get to right now without extra scientific stuff to figure out.
But you know that as an artist, because when you're doing art, you know, you experience a flow state when you're doing art, I bet.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've had my mother call. Like, it was one time when I was in college, and I was working on some painting, and my mom called me, and she said, "Are you all right?" I was like, "No, I'm fine." Like, it's just still like it's so hyper focused that you just, you know, I mean, you're, I don't know, it's like being in worship sometimes in church. So very similar, very similar.
Well, that's good. Worship becomes a flow state.
Yeah.
I mean, no, you know, Verveke's right in this stuff. And that's why he's so helpful, because he's taken apart the stuff. And I think part of why he's so helpful is because he's not doing it from a Christian perspective. Because if you're doing it from a Christian perspective, a whole group of people right now in our culture would not listen to him.
Yeah.
But because he's kind of associated with Buddhism and talking through that lens, people are listening. But when he's talking about the mechanics of this, yeah, you know, the mechanics are there. And, but, you know, and you're working through all these things with your cones and Augustine and your teaching, and so yeah, this authority and submission, and for your students in the classroom to actually, for your entire classroom, or at least most of them, because there's always a few stragglers, most of them to get into what a communal flow state. What's amazing, so when I was young, I started playing the violin in first grade, Suzuki method, and then by junior high, we start getting placed into these orchestras. And when you think about what an orchestra is, it's a communal flow state that you're all, you're creating something, you're one body in an orchestra. Or you look at a basketball team, you know, these five individuals with a basketball. And there are times when, if they're really practiced, I remember that one brief moment, the Sacramento Kings were good. And Vlade and all of these guys, boy, they were a flow state. Their game just flowed. And you watched it and you say, okay, so there's flow state. And we understand how individuals can get in a flow state. Well, here groups are in a flow state. Well, now we're getting a sense of, well, what is in Christianity the age to come?
Yeah.
Well, that's this astounding, perpetual, everlasting flow state. And when you think about it in that way, and you think about your art, and you think about what it means to not be encumbered by sin, and what it means to not have sin encumber us together, and so you think about your classroom, and you taste the age to come, or heaven. I don't want to be too much of the theologian here, but you taste the age of to come when you have that classroom experience with your kids when it all works.
Yeah.
And that needs authority.
It does. I mean, even like you're talking about the orchestra, like that's a good example because you still have a conductor.
That's right.
And then like you, I've wondered, I'm like, does that guy even need to be there sometimes?
Oh, yes, you do. And you know that.
yeah, but he does. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about a communal flow state. Which that's even, man, that's a whole, other thing. But then that happens a lot. I mean, we have theater, we have,
yes,
you're saying games.
Yes.
I mean, even military, I mean, as bad as war is, I mean, that's...
Well, why do they, even today, when you train a soldier, you teach them to march together.
Yeah, lots of...
They march together and you build units. That's all the same stuff.
Yeah,
and it requires authority. And now Peterson is right, that authority can get tyrannical.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And if it's just merely based on power... That's not really authority. And so what's amazing about Jesus is that he teaches with authority, but he exercises no tyranny over the crowd.
No, and that's what's fascinating about John, because he even says in John 5, I have it, it's like from verses 25 to 47, he lays out this like legitimacy. And he says, first I had testimony of John the Baptist. He testified of who I am. He said, look at my works. And then he said, the Father has given testimony of him. I'm assuming he's describing the baptism where it's announced as my son. He said, the scriptures testify of him. And then at the end, he's talking to the Pharisees. He's all like, Moses. He said, Moses spoke of me, but you don't know.
Right.
So the law judges you. And so it's the legitimacy part, I think, is what is, I guess that's kind of what the key is, because like even Jordan Peterson, it's like we're talking about like the, when he gets to his God number one, he kicks it off to evolution. And so what authority does evolution have? I mean, really, when you like if that's all there is, then like survival, like,
it and has then, the authority of death.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is...
That's
telling.
Yes, that is really telling. I hadn't thought about that either. But yeah, I mean, it's... Which is tyrannical in and of itself. I mean...
whereas the creator has the authority of life, which again, we're in Easter week, so resurrection. Yeah, resurrection. He has the authority of life. And death has authority.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's authority brought about by power, which is not the same.
Right.
Because in Jesus, in John 2, Jesus washes the disciples' feet, and he says, it's the whole thing of like, because then he lies, there's this chain. He says, if I'm of the Father because I was sent of the Father, but if you're sent by me, then you're of me, but then because you're of me, you're of the Father. And so it's this chain and this is what I'm saying. It like all lines up is, and when Nick was talking about the energy and going back, and I'm just like it all just like, it's mind boggling. I can't get over it. It was just, yeah.
Well, no, you're right. You're exactly right. Yeah. And it connects up. And that's why the authority of life, when Nick says, you know, the freedom goes in a sense up into God. Well, that's exactly right. That's where all the freedom is. The authority of death is, well, it stops. It's the authority of death. It can only, you know, that's tyranny. And that's why tyranny, and Peterson talks about Piaget's observation of the equilibrated state, there's no carrying cost. Tyranny loses because you always have to maintain that carrying cost. I've heard that the People's Republic of China spends four times what it does for internal security than it does for national security, external security. That's a huge carrying cost because they are practicing the tyranny of death. Jesus comes in and says, all authority in heaven and earth has been, well, it's actually Matthew, after all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. You know, it's the end of the Gospel of Matthew. Well, Jesus comes in and says, you know, and then he meets with Pilate. And Pilate's like, well, don't you know I have authority? And Jesus is like, the only authority you have has been given to you by God. And here's the thing, Pilate, let's watch how you use that authority. And so what Jesus does is he refuses to use the authority of death.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is, again, raised from the dead.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's pure authority, and that's why the submission to his authority is pure freedom. Because if his authority was that of death, and he has the authority of death, because he has all authority, but submitting to him is pure freedom. Because he invites, and then you learn that it's submitting to him is pure freedom, and that's not true of any other submission. And again, once you begin to see these things, and you see more of these things, you begin to see how they line up, and then you see another aspect, and you see it in the light of the gospel, and think, oh my goodness, that lines up too. That lines up too. And then it's like, well, this isn't an accident.
No, and I think that's been the biggest thing. I mean, really, it kind of started with me listening to Jordan Peterson. It's kind of been like a new phase in my Christian walk. It was like, wasn't a dead spot, but you know, it was like this level of analysis, this depth, and it all kind of has to do with like the idea of alignment, and then the patterns. I don't know if I just missed it or just I wasn't prepared to be able to handle it, but being able to see all these different things has really been helpful, and I think it's made me a lot more careful in a lot of ways.
How so? Careful in what way? Can you give me an example?
Well, I talked last time about self-righteousness and having to be real careful about that, because I was blessed with a good family, and I didn't have a lot of struggle that other people did. And so it's very easy to be judgmental. It's like, I think I said, being virtuous by consequence. I mean, like it doesn't make me better than somebody else. And then, so it's maybe more careful in not being quick to judge, and then not being so certain about things, which sounds kind of weird. So certain about assumptions or beliefs that I have that are inevitably wrong in some level of analysis. A lot of that has to do with growing up evangelical, and I've been having a lot of conversations with my father, and because he's my hero, my mom too, and like talking about how we grew up, and I've passed along, well, like my father, I gave him your podcast and then some books and stuff, and so we've been kind of all discussing about it, and it's not that like I'm angry about evangelicalism. It's just kind of like now that I've stepped back, I'm kind of looking at the frame, and then it's a very strong foundation. I understand why people use it, and I was lucky to grow up in a church where my pastor told me, hey, don't just take my word for it, search for yourself. So when you have somebody from the pulpit, even being evangelical, saying search for yourself, that's just super helpful. So my foundation was good. But now that when I'm looking back at it, I can see, even though it's strong, it's very brittle. It doesn't allow room for certain, like the creationist kind of thing, 6-day, that's kind of like what I was taught. And then like, as I grew up, I was kind of like, well, these don't line up. And then when I started looking at evolution, like, well, this doesn't really put a big X on the Bible and say, that's not real. I'm like, they can coexist, those things. And I mean, especially with what Jordan Peterson's talking about and how he kind of lines it all up. I'm like, well, yeah, I kind of had inklings of it, just didn't know all that side of it. And so that's where I'm more careful at, I think. It's because this is here, but then why do you think in 2019 you completely understand everything you just read after reading it? And so I think that's what I mean by more careful. Not just to kind of assume that I understand 100%. And especially after this, I was just like, I just read that. and then it's like a sledgehammer's taken to my face. Like, oh, John 5. Yeah, figure that one out.
Yeah. And there's so much of that in the Gospel of John. There's these discourses. And Jesus is just talking. And it's like, whoop, 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 whoop. And it's like, yeah.
Like, why would you keep that in there? Why would you keep it? Because he literally says everything. Like he's talking about the authority, and he keeps going back. And I'm like, well, okay, you said it in like just like this much of a difference.
Yep.
I am certain because I'm copying.
Yes, and you're copying it, which means you're not kind of mentally editing and skipping over, because again, there's the explored territory and the unexplored territory. And so what we do when we read scripture is when we see something that we initially map onto explored, we just jump over it. And then we look for the novelty. And so often when Christians read the Bible, they're looking for inspiration. So they're looking for novelty, and they see something that's kind of new, and boop, a little bit of inspiration, a little bit of insight, and then it's on to the next thing. But what your discipline is doing is forcing you to actually pay attention to the words, to see the repetition. So now suddenly you're getting a different level of insight where it's saying, now, wait a minute. Why is there so much repetition here? Why does Jesus want to make this point? It must be an important point. It's still in the Bible. And
honestly, like I could see somebody being like, oh, it's propaganda for him to just, it's like, well, no, you don't need to, put that much in there for propaganda. And then, like I said, it's like, it's almost the same thing, but it's a little bit of a variation. Cause like one time it's like, he talks about sending, like I was talking about. The other time it's kind of like, well, this is why I'm the Son of God, and then this is how you can trust that I'm the Son of God, and then you don't trust this because so you fail. And so it's I never just was blown away that much by any of the Gospels until I did this one this time. And it was just, you know, like I said, it was, everything was lining up. Like, cause literally like you did the Nick, you did the chord talk, then the Nick talk came out like 2 days after that. And then in between all this stuff is happening. And, it's crazy how it all connected. I mean, just, all at once.
So how is this impacting your art? I mean, I'm sure you don't have near enough time to do art for yourself that you want to do. I hope you are at least trying to find some time to do art yourself, because obviously all of this, it's all in your noodle. It's all going to come out through your fingers.
Yeah. And then that's kind of like how I traditionally work, is like, I would like over research something and then just kind of like visually vomit it out on whatever I was doing. But, last school year was really rough for me. I wasn't always an art teacher. I taught reading, writing, and social studies. For 7 years. So this is my first year teaching art. And last year was really, really rough. I wasn't teaching art at the time. I had been kind of trying to get my art going. So I've been making, one of the things I did last year was I made an Instagram account to like keep myself accountable. Like, David, you got to post like 2 or 3 times a week to keep that kind of thing going. And, one of the things that I've been having to, it's kind of weird. Like, I guess I've been submitting in a way. It's like, to make like Christian art never seemed really like, something seemed something shallow about it for the longest time. And it's not that it is, it's just, I think, outside of my frame of reference, or even having Jonathan Peggio kind of talk about icons, mm-hmm. I think I saw the value in it a lot more. So I've been kind of, I did a painting of a crucifix, but it was kind of intimidating. I was like really, really kind of terrified to do it. But,
well, you're an evangelical. And so, you know, so Peugeot is Orthodox and he's doing icons. So there's a tradition in which he is working.
Right.
And that makes it, that eliminates a whole layer of stuff that you have to deal with.
Yeah. And so, most of the art that I deal with has kind of been more like heritage. So I'm from South Louisiana. My dad took me hunting since I could walk. And then my grandfather fished and trapped and skinned whatever was in season until the markets kind of fell out and he passed away. And so a lot of my artwork has to do with that, which I have a heritage as a Christian. So that's kind of, I've been kind of exploring that more. Because heritage and ancestry kind of always been on my thing, but then adding that into it, kind of like putting myself into it, I guess, in a way. It's been different. I mean, I've always, and then like my uncles, they live in, well, my dad's from Michigan. And so my uncles came down, and then they were like, oh, my dad was saying, let's explain this. And different things I've done recently. And I kind of was like, oh, well, that's really old. I did that in college, but it was me working out. Because at the time in college, I was reading a lot of Joseph Campbell. And then my ex-girlfriend was, she was Catholic, which was weird because I grew up evangelical and then like Louisiana's all Catholic. And somehow my very Catholic town that I grew up in, I just didn't, just all of it. It was just like, oh, I missed all of it. And, the church I grew up in, a lot of the people had been Catholic, and then it was kind of like a counter to
right
the rigidness of everything.
Yep.
And so a lot of me having to work out like, what did I believe and why did I believe it? Did I just believe it because my parents told me that and that's what I learned? And So that kind of definitely showed in some of our work. And then it's still, I think that's kind of what's been happening. Just lately, I've been kind of more focused on trying to paint some like icons and things like that. And it forces me to not be, it's kind of like an authority thing. It's like you're trying to aim at, it's like Christ is like, don't aim at me, aim at my Father, because I'm from the Father. So when you're aiming at me, yes, that's great. But remember, you're aiming at the Father. And it's the same thing when he talks about like Moses. Like Moses spoke of me and you're aiming at Moses, but that's wrong. You're supposed to be aiming at, you would know me if you were aiming in the right direction.
Right, right. If you really knew Moses, you would recognize me.
Right. And so I think I'm kind of like constraining myself in some ways by saying like, oh, let's just do this thing and see where it takes you. It really affected my Father because, and I like I said, this just a level of analysis I'm looking at things way different. Because when I grew up, we have just an empty cross. Like it's just.
Right, right. That's Protestant. There's a, and we haven't, you know, Jonathan and I haven't really talked about this. We're still working, and it shouldn't come as a surprise to an Orthodox person. 500 years later, we're still trying to work through what happened in the Protestant Reformation. And it happened for a reason. And whether you're Protestant or not, whether you're protesting or not protesting, the issues surrounding the protest have to be worked through for the churches to come together. And there were real issues. There were real issues around that protesting, and we haven't worked them through. But actually, I think through this Jordan Peterson moment, we are actually working on a lot of those issues. And that's why partly in my videos, I've gotten into this neo-sacramentalism and what are sacraments and why it. So what happens in the Protestant Reformation is Zwingli goes way out and says, well, they're just signs. And evangelicals have kind of followed Zwingli. See, Calvin is in the middle and says real presence, but what the heck does that mean? And of course, well, the Roman Catholic, well, transubstantiation, well, what really do you mean by that? Consubstantiation, okay. But that all gets into this question of whether that cross is empty or not.
Yeah.
Because, and, you know, Louisiana, evangelical in Louisiana. Well, yeah, you got all the issues are there, baby.
Well, I mean, it's more common than you think. Like, there's a lot of evangelical. I think it's just usually a lashback. It's like people don't. And I have some friends who are Catholic, and they're amazing, and they're really devout, and they know they understand their traditions, but for most of the people that I encounter don't. They don't know why they do the things they do. And then I went to a few masses with my ex-girlfriend, was trying to be a good boyfriend and we're going to do both kind of thing. And I understood the reverence of everything. And I like that. But then when I hear Jonathan Pageau talk about the liturgy and the importance of it and participating in this communal activity and the whole point, and I was like, oh yeah, everybody I've met doesn't understand that. And I'm not trying to be, you know, flippant about it,
right.
But like they really don't. And it's right. Kind of sad because I'm like, you have this huge tradition and heritage of this amazing thing. And, you don't get it. And like, it's like, you're talking about all these different Reformation things. Like, I don't know any of that. I go to Methodist church now because,
which was a whole nother Reformation after the Protestants. I mean, the Methodists is this huge Reformation against the Anglicans, and
I'm a Christian. I'm just going to participate. I was like, I gotta. Like, so I said the Ryan Reeves was so helpful because it made me go like, oh, okay, wow, they missed all this. Wasn't taught any of this because I think that's one of the things of like. I feel like every denomination probably had, like, they all have their own issues. They all have something that kind of ends up becoming a middle mini idol. And I think with evangelicalism, it's really apparent that if you go too far, you end up idolizing the scripture. And that's not supposed to be, it's where we get what we need, but it's not the end. You need to be looking past it.
And you have to look through scripture to who scripture is speaking of, which right. is exactly what Jesus says about Moses to exactly. religious leaders of his day. You yeah. can't turn the words, if you take the words of Moses, you can turn them into an idol and miss who those point to. But it's, and now we don't want to go full Zwinglian on that either. Right. I'd say, oh, it merely points. No, it's the word of God. Well, what on earth do we mean by that? And so.
Well, that's a relationship, right? Of like, it was sent, you know what I mean? Because Jesus says something like, it's almost, it's a chain of authority, right? It's like, in the ancient times, you shouldn't kill a messenger. Because if you did kill a messenger, it was basically paramount to like having killed the person who sent the messenger.
That's exactly right.
And so I think that's what it, I think that's the key thing there. It's like.
Yes. And when you talk, and you're right there in the middle of it with John, because the question is, okay, Jesus is the Son of God. Now, the difficulty we have in our culture is when we hear Paul is the son of Stan, so my father's name was Stan, we think biologically, we think materially. That's the primary frame of reference that we point to. So Jesus is the Son of God. That is so complex. And of course, so you have the Orthodox and the Roman Catholics, you know, wrestling and continuing to say, okay, well, keep Mary in the picture. And Protestants, all of those issues fold out like they do because of real things happening. And so when Jesus is the Son of God, well, he is the, it's, you know, you could, let's put it in an ancient political frame. He's the prince of the great king that comes. And that's why in the Gospel of Matthew, when you have the parallels, the parables where they kill the tenants of the vineyard, the tenants of the vineyard kill the son of the owner. And of course, in that context, when Jesus tells that story, everyone just, you know.
Yeah, even today that carries a lot of weight. But back then, it's like effectively having killed that entire family because the son was whom they depended to continue the family.
That's right.
So not only did they just.
Yeah. And so Jesus says, what do you think the owner will do to those tenants? Everyone knows the answer. Everybody knows the answer. The owner's going to come because he owns it. He's got power. He's got servants. You know, you look at what Abraham did with his servants to these little kings. He's going to come. He's going to slaughter them. Yeah. And so then you get to Peter's sermon on Pentecost Sunday, and Peter says, God sent his son, and we killed him. And they all, you know. Yeah. And then Peter says, you know, but God raised him from the dead. You know, it's like everyone with blood on their hands, we killed the mob boss's son. But God raised him from the dead. But now you killed him. Now God raised him. What ought you to do? Don't make the same mistake again. And, you know, 5,000 are added to their number that day. So, you know, people are so dismissive. Ignorant people are dismissive of the Bible because they don't understand.
Yeah.
They don't understand what's going on and what you've, you know, what you're doing through all of this. And this is the great, I think this is the great gift that Jordan Peterson has given. He just kind of turned a light on, and everyone isn't necessarily just looking at Jordan Peterson. They're reading Augustine, and they're listening to Peugeot, and they're reading Dostoevsky and Solzhenitsyn, and they're discovering this heritage, and we have Jordan Peterson to thank for that. And yeah. That's a huge gift.
Yeah. I would never read Crime and Punishment if he hadn't harped on it so much.
Yeah. So
Brothers Karamazov is sitting on my shelf waiting for me to read it too. So
yeah, and it's not an easy read. It's a long book, and you got to figure out, now who are they talking about? Why are they using that name for this person? And what happened here? And endless conversations. And yeah, Dostoevsky is these fat books.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. That's what I did. I like reading. I read a lot when I was younger, and I would never shy away from a book because of this month. So.
Well, I'm very sorry, David, that I didn't remember our first talk when I started this call.
It's okay. It's not a problem.
I'm very sorry.
You don't have to apologize for that, because like I talked to Jonathan Peugeot a month or two ago, because I pay to support him at that level where I can talk with him once a year. And I understand what you guys are doing, and I'm just glad that y'all are doing it. And you and him, and I'll probably never meet or talk to Jordan Peterson, but like all you guys are mentors, mm-hmm. To me, and probably countless other people who don't have a conversation with you or won't, for whatever reason. So just God bless y'all, and thank y'all for what y'all doing. And I was on Patreon supporting you, and I'd like to give something if I can. So if you have another method besides Patreon, I couldn't deal with all the craziness and banning.
Well, there's stuff in my links. So if you'd like to donate, that's fine. And if not, if you can't and you don't want to, that's fine too. I'm fortunate in that I'm a pastor of a church, and the church supports me, and my church has been very generous in terms of, they're very enthusiastic about what's been happening with my YouTube channel and very supportive. So
that's awesome. It's really telling about your church, because I don't think every church would be happy to have their pastor online. That's just drawing Twitter.
I'm sure there's a lot of churches that the pastor, how much time you spend in talking to those people? Do those people put money in the plate? You shouldn't be talking to people who don't put money in the plate. But no, my church is, the people are very generous, and they have a very vivid sense of the kingdom, and this is for God's kingdom. And nobody in my church, hardly anybody in my church listens to any of this stuff, because of course it takes a certain, anyway, but no, I appreciate it.
About like 3 and 4 videos.
yeah. Well, and I do it, but my church knows me. I've been here 22 years, and I've always blogged and been involved in this organization over here. And I've always, taken care of the church, but been involved in a lot of other things too. And so this is just the latest thing, and they know that for me to stay vital as a pastor and to have something interesting to say on Sunday, I need to be connected and continue to explore. And so all that stuff comes into the sermons, and also people have come into the church. And so, it's good.
Well, that's to your credit, because kind of the situation where I grew up, when it was like, it was a pretty small town. And then if you weren't going to church, it's because you didn't want to. It wasn't because there wasn't a place for you. They had that many churches. It really kind of got like a cloistered mentality. So for a lot of, not necessarily every church, but like I saw it was a very common thing. It's like it was kind of like just kind of cliquish. And then whatever was coming from the outside was either kind of dismissed or, I don't know, it's like kind of used in a way that just, it was like not, I don't know. I feel like I'm talking bad about the church that I grew up in, because it's not true. They did a lot of good work, and we did a lot of community outreach. And I've seen churches who don't try to keep current kind of thing. And it's really sad, because you see a church that like one man, put together, and whether or not all of our churches are in communion or agree, it's like it's still a net good that you got a church somewhere. Especially if they're preaching the word and everything, and then you see all this good work happen, and then just for the church just gone, like nobody in the building. It's that's not, my church is still going, my home church that I grew up in is still going, but there was a church that my wife and I went to before we started going to Methodist church, and it closed down, and it was, the reasons we left weren't like the greatest, but it wasn't on our part, just kind of like the way the church hierarchy fell out. And so we ended up leaving because it wasn't working out for us. But then they closed down. I was just like, man, it's sad. It's like, you know, it's there. But the building got bought by another church. So hopefully they can kind of stick through it and keep it together.
Well, I'm grateful for this little church here that, you know, God's kingdom always hangs by a thread, and that way we always learn to trust him because we walk by faith, not by sight. And that's the whole enterprise. So
you gotta walk out by fear and trembling, right?
That's right. That's right. So thank you, David. This has been a delight, and I will send this to you. And if you agree to post it, then
you can post it. I just didn't want to, hope I didn't say anything. I was hoping I wouldn't say anything ridiculous, and I don't think I did. So
no, you didn't. You didn't at all. It was wonderful. All right. So it's great talking to you.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.